Robin Meredith has been watching India and China transform their economies and the global economy. She's a foreign correspondent for Forbes magazine and covers both countries. She's written a new book called The Elephant and the Dragon, The Rise of India and China and What It Means for All of Us. Robin Meredith, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with the iPod because it's connected to both China and India. Would you explain how?
Absolutely. The iPod is such a great example of globalization today and about how India and China are connected to the global economy and to our daily lives. The iPod is a product so many of us Americans use every day. But the chip that is the brains of the iPod was invented in Hyderabad, India. I've actually been to the company that makes it. It was invented in the basement of a bungalow of a neighborhood in Hyderabad. And when you go there, they'll open up a closet proudly to show you that the computers in their little bungalow will never go down. Why? Because there's a stack of car batteries that serve as the backup power in case the electricity shuts off periodically in Hyderabad, which it doesn't want to do. Nonetheless, a small team of people in Hyderabad invented the brains of the iPod. They offered it to Apple. Apple said, "Oh, this is great," and bought into their vision of how you could really transform the music industry. Apple then designed this beautiful product that has really revolutionized the music industry. And it's interesting because the actual iPod itself is made almost exclusively in China, often by Taiwanese and other foreign subcontractors. So here we have what is happening more and more often for products sold in America. We have a product, the idea of which have come from India, the manufacturing of it takes place in China, and then it is shipped over to America, where an American company distributes and markets it, and, by the way, makes the lion's share of the profits from the product. The Indian company gets paid, the Chinese and Taiwanese companies get paid, but the lion's share of the profits stay with Apple.
You know, your new book is about the economies of China and India. What other connections do you see between the two? I mean, obviously, one of the connections is that you've been covering both of them, but there,
yes,
there
are
other comparisons that you make.
Well, sure. You know, it's funny. The biggest, most important thing for me about India and China, the one thing about them that's really similar, is that they're these giant nations, each with more than 1 billion people, that are embracing both globalization and capitalism at the same time. And that a change of that magnitude hasn't happened in a very, very long time. Many economists say that the most recent event of similar magnitude to shake the world economy was when America itself walked onto the world economic stage. So it's very, very important. It's a very big change. Aside from that, India and China are in so many ways absolute opposites. Of course, India is democratic, China's authoritarian. But in many, many other ways, they're as opposite as Gandhi and Mao.
What are some of the ways that they're opposite?
Well, when you go to India, you see just a riot of bright colors, and you find a cacophonous nation, you know, one with 30 different languages, including English. On the other hand, you also see airports and roads that are just unbelievably shabby. The time zone in India mystifies. It's a half hour off from every place else in the world. So when it's noon in Philadelphia, it's 9:30 at night in Bombay. It's very, very confusing. China's the opposite of that. It's completely straightforward. The national language is Mandarin. The clocks line up with the rest of the world. The Communist Party runs the country with an iron hand. And the roads and airports there are all brand new. That's really helping China connect its factories with the world of consumers.
So it's kind of paradoxical that the, you know, communist government is making it easy for capitalists because everything is...
Isn't it funny?
Yeah, everything falls into line. Everything is done in a certain way.
Exactly. Even the five-year plans, the old-fashioned five-year plans of the Communist Party, actually help Western businesses doing business there know what it is the Chinese government has as a priority and know what they'll be spending money on. That makes it a lot easier for them.
You give histories of how both India and China became global economic powers, and you compare their different approaches to getting there. You point in your book that India is the first place that white-collar jobs were really exported to on a large scale from mm-hmm. the United States. And you say that kind of white-collar offshoring, particularly in the high-tech industry, came about by accident. What was the accident?
Well, when America got caught in the Y2K scare, we worried that when 1999 New Year's Eve rolled around and became 2000, that our computers would stop working. And suddenly, there was a huge demand from corporate America to reprogram their corporate computer system so that they didn't crash. And there weren't enough programmers in America, particularly ones that used some older programs, and were familiar with those, to reprogram them all in time before midnight on December 31st, 1999. So a lot of that work was outsourced almost as an experiment to India. And then when the work was done successfully, American companies thought, hey, this is great. It only cost a tenth of what it cost in the United States. And it was done quickly. And the quality was very high. What else can we start moving to India? And then a lot of computer work began to move to India, computer programming in particular. Then after the computer programming work moved, American companies said, wait a minute, I bet we could do other things there. And so now, if you were an American and you didn't do your own taxes and you hired a big accounting firm to do them for you, most likely your taxes were prepared by an Indian accountant. The Hollywood movie that you're watching, if it's animated, much of the animation may have been done in India rather than at home in the United States. There are all kinds of jobs that you're not necessarily aware of that are moving to India, and they're higher and higher level jobs. They're not just call centers in which people call 800 numbers and reach an operator in India. Those are moving too, but the economics make sense for a number of other jobs, and that's what's so alarming, I think, about the global job market.
That we're losing jobs in America to other countries.
Yes, and simply that, you know, the economic transformation of India and China means that suddenly we have a global job market. We didn't used to have a global job market at all. It didn't exist. But in the last 10 years, about a billion people have been added to the global labor pool. And that's one out of four workers around the world. So all of those workers in India and China earn dramatically less than Westerners. And I have seen this on my many trips to India and China as a foreign correspondent, and it's alarming to me because I don't think most Americans realize that this is happening and that it's so easy for companies to move jobs around the world. And what it means is that Americans can no longer expect to earn 10 times more than everyone else for the same work. We just can't.
My guest is Robin Meredith, and she's a journalist with Forbes magazine. She's an international correspondent and has been covering India and China. Her new book is called The Elephant and the Dragon, The Rise of India and China and What It Means for All of Us. You know, China's had this terrible crisis with the contaminated pet food and toothpaste and defective products. The head of the Chinese equivalent of the FDA was executed for taking bribes. Is execution typical in China for white-collar crime?
It is, especially for corruption. China executes more prisoners than any other country in the world. Beijing has been trying to stamp down on the problem, the very prevalent problem of corruption, for some time. So the Food and Drug Administrator, who was executed, was one of a number of Chinese officials who have been executed as punishment for corruption over the last few years. And the deterrent doesn't seem to be working too well because China has and will have into the future a really terrible corruption problem. I don't see it being stamped out. Beijing has struggled with it for years and years and years.
Do you think that there's a fear now of the Made in China label and that China's ability to export on the level that it has is going to be affected by these recent scares, these recent problems?
I think there should be a fear of the Made in China label for certain products. I'm very concerned about Chinese food, food grown in China. And the reason is that as we see, you clearly cannot trust Chinese regulators to, you can't trust the stamp of approval of a Chinese regulator. They're quite often corrupt around the country. Even Hu Jintao, the Chinese president, would admit so. And I think that that's really worrisome. The other big problem is the environment. If food that's grown in China, even if it isn't contaminated with chemicals that are not technically allowed to be used, is grown under acid rain in almost every corner of the country. China's air is extremely, extremely polluted, and I just don't think that could be good for us. So I think that the recent scandal over and scare involving pet food and tainted toothpaste was really, really useful both for American consumers and American companies that are buying and importing Chinese goods and then putting their label on them. Because for consumers, it's a wake-up call that reminds you you want to know where your food is grown and where some of the more sensitive products you use, like toys that your children play with, for instance, are made. And for companies, it's a wake-up call because they need to know that it's their brand, the American brand, that will be damaged if they don't rigorously test products that they're buying from China and make sure that they're safe.
Well, how does this affect what you eat and what you purchase when you're in China?
If you're in China, you can't really avoid eating food grown in China. But I'm based in Hong Kong. I try to buy produce, certainly, and any fish from Australia.
Well, Robin Merida, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry. I really appreciate it.
Robin Meredith is a foreign correspondent for Forbes. Her new book about India and China is called The Elephant and the Dragon.